Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Junaid Ahmad, who's a professor of law at Lahore University of Management Sciences in Pakistan. His research interests include constitutional theory, political Islam, globalization, and Islamic social movements. He's here in the United States for a U.S.-Pakistan Leaders Forum. Welcome to Background Briefing, Junaid Ahmad.
Great to be with you.
And, of course, there's been a political bombshell let off in Pakistan, where the Supreme Court has ruled to disqualify Prime Minister Gilani and vacate him from office. This is, of course, already throwing a fairly unpopular Pakistani government into further disarray. What's your sense of, here you are at a U.S.-Pakistan Leadership Forum. I guess this is the last thing you want to hear, right?
Right. Well, you know, I hope there's no conspiracy theories as to what we were concocting here in Washington, D.C. But this is, it wasn't expected because folks who've been following Pakistan will know that, after about 6 months or so, elections are planned to be held in Pakistan. And this was perhaps going to be and so might be the first civilian government to fulfill its 5-year term in office. And that would be a first in Pakistan's history, where there normally is a military coup that typically shortens the length of these civilian governments. So, but at the same time, the Supreme Court has been after the Prime Minister, specifically on the issue of reopening the corruption cases against the sitting president of the country, another PPP stalwart and the chairman of the Pakistan People's Party, Asif Ali Zardari, which up until now the prime minister has refused to do. So that was the background. We knew that the Supreme Court was after the prime minister. It was just a question of whether they would actually, you know, ask the prime minister to step down from office.
So the roots of this come in a ruling, a contempt ruling by the Supreme Court, because Gilani refused to ask Swiss authorities to reopen corruption cases against President Zardari, allegations that go back to the 1990s when he and his wife, of course, the late President Benazir Bhutto, were suspected of using Swiss bank accounts to launder up to $12 million in bribes, apparently, allegedly from companies seeking customs inspection contracts. I mean, Zardari's often been referred to as Mr. 10%. He's not exactly held in high regard by the average Pakistani, is he?
Right. In fact, that's an old title of his. Unfortunately, Mr. 10% is often now called Mr. 20 or 30%. Once he assumed the office of the presidency, the Mr. 10% was perhaps the title when he was investment minister and Benazir was in power in the 90s. But I think that the other, the background to all of this is the National Reconciliation Ordinance that was promulgated toward the end of the military dictator Musharraf's rule, which essentially gave amnesty to all these politicians, but was specifically meant for the Pakistan People's Party politicians like Benazir and others, so to allow them to facilitate their return to power. And the Supreme Court had declared this ordinance as unconstitutional and therefore had pressed upon the Pakistan People's Party government to move ahead with these charges against not just Zardari, but including the President Zardari. And, of course, the Prime Minister Gilani had owed his own position to Zardari. So he had refused to carry forward these the pressure on the Swiss authorities to reopen these corruption cases. And he was held in contempt of court. And from that time, he still refused to move on this question. So, like I said, it was Pakistan was rife with speculation of whether the Supreme Court would go ahead and ask him to just step down from office, because even after the contempt of court just, he really has not moved on this. So it was a question of when they would actually do it, but even of if they would actually do it, since there's so few months left before the next elections anyways.
Again, I'm speaking with Junaid Ahmad, who's a professor of law at Lahore University of Management Sciences in Pakistan, and we're talking about the sacking by the Supreme Court of the Prime Minister Jilani and the subsequent political turmoil as an election approaches. This does feel like about the last thing that Pakistan needs. I mean, there's some serious problems that should be getting the attention of Pakistan's leader, and the president had to come back from Moscow to deal with this current crisis. I mean, you've got the threat from the Islamists. There was a popular singer that was shot recently, I take it, by Islamists. And you've got now we hear that the Taliban are banning immunizations in the Northwest Territories, immunizations for polio. There's some serious stuff going on. This feels a little bit like kind of reality TV in a way, a bit of a soap opera, isn't it?
No, Pakistan seems to be the land of diversionary issues, issues which perhaps do not have great significance or importance in terms of affecting the ordinary Pakistani, but become huge or generate huge media frenzies around them. And I think you're absolutely right on this matter as well. Although, you know, this has been an old tussle that analysts in Pakistan have been observing between the army establishment, which many say have been backing the judiciary in moving forward in these cases against the Pakistan People's Party government-led government. And so that tussle has been ongoing. And you're absolutely right, the issues confronting Pakistan right now, although I must say the singer who is originally from the northwestern areas of Pakistan, it's now been learned was killed merely by an ex-husband of hers. It was not the Taliban. But nevertheless, there's, of course, the issue of the militancy and the insurgency in the northwest. There's the serious deterioration in U.S.-Pakistan relations over the past, you know, now year and a half, but particularly over the past several months, the inability to resolve the issue of the resumption of the NATO supply lines that go from Pakistan and supply the equipment to the NATO forces in Afghanistan. And internally, of course, issues of power and electricity is just really devastating, not just industry, but of course, ordinary people throughout the country, and of course, growing inequality and poverty and so on. So just incredible amount of issues internally in Pakistan, as well as between the United States and Pakistan. And, you know, your listeners will know that sort of the war on terror as it's being waged in the region has deeply affected Pakistan and the rise of militancy in Pakistan as a result of that. So all of these issues are there on the one hand, and then we have this political crisis in which the prime minister has been unseated and we have elections coming up. So it's Pakistan just seems to go from one crisis to the next.
And of course, Junaid Ahmad, just to sort of add more to the mix here, a Pakistani real estate tycoon has accused the Supreme Court justice who issued this ruling vacating the office of the Prime Minister of turning a blind eye to his own son's alleged corrupt financial practices. So,
an issue that has emerged. And again, I think following up on the theme of diversionary issues. I mean, you know, there are some analysts which are speculating again to divert the attention from the Supreme Court Chief Justice's own, interference and in these cases involving this big real estate tycoon Malik Riaz, and his in fact indifference to what his son was up to. To then go and press forward with this removal of the prime minister is very much related to that.
And when you refer to the Pakistani people have much more on their plate than these diversionary things, I mean, these power cuts that we're talking about largely in Punjab are up to 18 hours a day in the heat of the summer. That's clearly a sign. So let me ask you about the broader issues here. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Obama can't apologize for the killing of the 24 Pakistani soldiers on that border post is because Mitt Romney's already accused Obama of having a foreign policy of apologising, and that may be part of the deadlock in terms of opening the supply lines. At least that's what the Pakistani government has said, that that's their bottom line. The US appears to be making deals with the Russians and the Stans for an alternative way out. Is there any likelihood that the Pakistanis and the Americans will stop talking past each other and start dealing honestly with each other? Because this relationship is very poisonous, clearly.
Yeah. And it becomes even difficult to do so in an election year, as you're pointing out, sort of the accusations from Romney and the Republicans. But, I that's not to say that I think there was a real opportunity right after the actual incident itself in November last year. And in fact, now we know through WikiLeaks and it was leaked to the Pakistani press as well, that in fact the U.S. ambassador in Pakistan was in favor of a very quick apology, which may have avoided all of these the issues that emerged later on. But right now, you're absolutely right. The Pakistanis have pretty much continued to insist on an apology for what happened. And in addition to that, the significant issue of the drone campaign that the U.S. continues to wage in Pakistan. The Pakistani government, I mean, not just the military establishment, which of course is becoming quite, in Pakistan is becoming quite, nationalist, but also parliament. The Pakistani parliament has demanded that the U.S. review and hopefully end its drone campaign in Pakistan as well. Now, of course, the Obama administration this year, during an election year, has rejected both of these, really, these demands. And that's not to say that, even within the Obama administration itself, there have been differences on this question. There have been tensions. And I think for many Pakistanis, it's been unfortunate, I'm sure for many Americans, that it seems that every single time on these matters, the CIA and the Pentagon tend to get their view, over the view of say the State Department. That's what it seems like to many Pakistani analysts that are trying to understand, something like this question of apology.
Well, just in closing, Junaid Hamad, since you're here at the U.S.-Pakistan Leadership Conference, there are hints that the U.S. may be, a lot of the officials, and particularly the Secretary of Defense, seem to be pretty fed up. And as the U.S. withdraws from Afghanistan, and if indeed they withdraw via the Stans and get all that equipment out, there's a sense that the U.S. might be washing its hands of Pakistan. Now, was there any of that coming up in the meeting that you just had? Is there a sense that this relationship is not just a question of a kind of, use the analogy of a married couple. It's not that they're having a trial separation. They may actually get a divorce.
It's interesting because, the way many of us speak about the U.S.-Pakistan relationship is that it's a bad marriage with no hope for divorce. and that seems to be the situation. I mean, I think that Pakistan is just such an important country, close to 200 million nuclear armed in that part of the world, geostrategically incredibly important, and with a very powerful military. And so I think that type of an approach, I just really don't think it's feasible. I think that right now from both sides, both the Americans and the Pakistanis, and I dare say that more so from Washington, I really think there needs to be a realization that Pakistan is also a player, has its own interests in Afghanistan and the region, and concerns, whether it's of greater Indian influence in Afghanistan or other players in the region like Russia. And the Pakistanis will always have a concern of what's going on next door in Afghanistan, in Kabul, who the regime is in Kabul. So I think that once that type of realization comes about from the United States, from policymakers in Washington, can we see Washington and Islamabad coming back to the table and really joining together to bring about a regional solution to the heart of the issue, and that is the crisis in Afghanistan? I think that right now, often all of the blame is just deflected onto Pakistan, when I think that Afghanistan itself is still in a mess. it still has outside powers meddling in its affairs, supporting their horses in the race, and Pakistan does the same. It says that it deserves to also have a horse in the race. And I think that once those regional interests are understood and appreciated, and I think once all these players are brought to the table, can a solution come about. Otherwise, I really don't see much hope for U.S.-Pakistan relations.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Junaid Ahmad.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Junaid Ahmad, who's a professor of law at Lahore University of Management Sciences in Pakistan. His research interests include constitutional theory, political Islam, globalization, and Islamic social movements. He's here in the United States for a U.S.-Pakistan leadership forum. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.